Good evening and welcome along to another episode of The Score on this Thursday evening, the 25th of July. I'm your host, Mark Gallagher, and we have a lot to talk about in the sporting world between now and 8 o'clock. After the drama of the hurling final at the weekend, it is, of course, another huge weekend in GAA action as Galway and Armagh will contest this year's All-Ireland football final. We'll talk to Michael McMullen of the Gaelic Life to get his thoughts on how that one will pan out. We'll also speak to Mark English as he has been in flying form in his preparation for his third crack at the Olympic Games. Mark will compete in the 800 metres and Oisin Kelly caught up with him a little bit earlier this week. But first, we'll start with League of Ireland Soccer, and Finn Harps are on the road yet again tomorrow evening as Darren Murphy's men make the trip to Limerick to play Treaty United in the SSE Airtricity League First Division. Highland's Chris Ashmore spoke to former Harps man Declan Boyle about the Balbuffet side's chances against Treaty, Derry City being the favourites to win the FAI Senior Cup, and the Donegal connections in Everton's friendly with Sligo Rovers and more.
Well, Declan, busy week ahead for Finn Harps once again, having made back-to-back trips to Cork and exited the cup, losing just 1-0 on both occasions on the travels again and away to Treaty United. On paper, not quite as difficult, and I'm sure Darren Murphy will be hoping that they can get something out of this game.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, as you mentioned, like third trip down to Munster is a lot. You know, obviously, 3 weeks of travelling away from home is not easy, especially going to Cork twice. But, I mean, two big performances against Cork, even though they lost, you know, to go down there and only concede one goal and, you know, to narrowly miss out on the league and obviously the cup, disappointing, obviously. But, you know, you can take great confidence from that, going down to, the runaway league champions probably at the end of the season. You know, to now bring that into Treaty, obviously, it's an opportunity to get 3 points, and the results against Treaty have been quite favourable towards Harps. So yeah, they will, you know, should go down there with a lot of confidence and not try to get 3 points out of the game, even though it won't be easy. But I think bring their form that they played obviously down in Turner's Cross, they could well capable of getting 3 points down in Limerick.
Yeah, so we've about 12 games to go. Harps have pretty much been fourth or fifth more or less all season. And if you look at the table, Cork runaway leaders 55 points, Athlone 40, UCD 37. I think everybody would feel Athlone and UCD will probably be battling it for that second spot. And Athlone seem to have certainly got a bit of form of late. Then just behind Harps on 34 points, you've Bray 32, Wexford 30 and Cove 29. So, you know, a couple of wins now, a little bit of momentum and maybe Harps could open up a little bit of a gap and it'd be nice to be going into those final few games feeling that you're fairly secure of getting a playoff spot.
Yeah, listen, I think it'd be a really good season if we can end up in the playoff spot, you know, considering where we came from last season. It's not going to be easy, obviously. You know, you've the chasing pack coming behind you with Bray and Wexford, you know, and Cove pushing on into that, trying to that area as well. You have a wee bit of you're a point over Bray and Wexford are a wee bit behind that, obviously, you know, so they have a game in hand over Bray and Finn Harps, you know. So, yeah, listen, it's all to play for, you know, and really important now is how you finish out the season, really. You know, this is, you know, the last quarter of the season, the most important part is, and now you need to hit form where you get good results both home and away, you know, and that's going to be an important one. And, you know, crucially, it'll probably come down to the last four or five matches of the game and the season, and it'll probably end up coming down maybe to the last one or two games, you know. So, but, you know, it's important just keep doing what you're doing and winning games and getting points on the board and look after yourself and don't worry about the other teams around you. But, you know, probably throughout the whole last quarter of the season, you'll probably be looking for teams to do you favours and get you results. But, you know, more importantly, if you look after yourself and win your home games and get draws away from home, you have a really good chance of making the playoff.
Now, in the Premier Division restricted programme this weekend, Derry City aren't in action in the league again until the 5th of August when they travel to Talca Park to take on Shells. And the draw has been made during the week for the Sports Direct FAI Cup third round. And City, who of course knocked out the holders St. Pat's last weekend, Declan, they're taking on the team who beat Harps in the second round, that's Cork City. So not an easy draw as far as Derry City are concerned. And, you know, if they miss out on the league title, the general feeling is Rory Higgins needs to deliver. They need a bit of silverware at the Brandywell and the Cup. I know they were Cup favourites before the draw was made on Tuesday afternoon. Cork City will not make it easy for them.
No, absolutely. You know, it's a difficult place to go, obviously. I mean, Cork has loads of confidence. I mean, Turner's Cross will probably be rocking that night as well, a big crowd, especially in Derry City, will probably be a big away crowd as well. So, you know, I mean, that was a real positive result for Derry City after getting knocked out of Europe, you know, to go back and to comfortably beat St Pat's at home 3-0 is a big, big performance, a big result for them. But they need that, you know, their budget dictates they need trophies, they need to be winning league titles, they need to be winning FAI Cups, you know, and that comes with pressure, obviously. So, I mean, they have a chance now of going out and winning the FAI Cup, and that's probably what they're planning to do with Shamrock Rovers knocked out of the Cup. And, you know, you have St Pat's out now, obviously, as well. On top of that, you've Dundalk out. So there's three big teams that are gone, you know, with the real Cup experience. So they have a chance, you know, a real chance. But, I mean, you know, with the quality of players that they have at their disposal, you would think that they can go down to Cork and turn them over in Turner's Cross.
Yeah, and just looking at some of the other, I suppose, the standout tie in the third round, and these games not being played until the weekend of Sunday, August the 18th, we have the Premier Division leaders Shelburne at home to Galway United. And both those sides, I mean, if you look at the results this season, there's a lot of 1-0s in there. I don't think it's going to be a goals feast in that one.
No, and to be fair, that's one thing. Well, nevertheless, there might be a shock in the cards, but every time they've played, it's been a 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, you know. So there has been very little between them. Both teams defensively very good, you know, and they don't give away too many goals, you know. And obviously, Galway don't score a lot of goals, even though they scored 6 against Longford in a Cup last week. But in general, in the Premier League, they haven't scored a lot of goals, but they haven't received many neither. And normally, if one of those teams score first, they normally go on to win the game. So yeah, listen, that's going to be a difficult match, obviously, for Shelburne and for Galway, but you know, Galway are going really well, and they're playing actually Sligo Rovers at the weekend, so that'll be another local derby, Northwest Derby, and so it'll be interesting to see how that game goes. But yeah, I mean, Galway had a really good season, John Caulfield, and we know Ollie, the experience that he has as well. They set the team up well and they're hard to play against, and obviously Shelburne are quite similar.
Yeah, and interesting to note that both Shells and Derry, you know, both still in with a chance of a cup double, cup and league double, so who knows what's going to happen. Elsewhere, amongst the other ties, Kerry getting rewarded for getting to this stage of the competition. They're at home to Bohemians, and an all Limerick meeting of Tree United and Pike Rovers. That'll be some intense rivalry down there.
Yeah, they will do, because, I mean, a lot of the players that play for Treaty and they end up leaving, they normally go to Pike Rovers, you know, so it's nearly like a fall down club from Treaty, you know, so there'll be close rivalry there, and a lot of players will know each other very, very well. So that's going to be a really, I mean, they talk about derbies, there's a real derby there between those two teams, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And we know the experience that Pike Rovers have and intermediate football, and obviously junior football as well, done really well down through the years. So you know, that'll be an interesting one. Yeah, it's very open to see, you know, who's going to come through. Like in Shelburne, you would think of a really good chance of going well in the Cup. Derry City, as you mentioned, Bowes as well, Sligo Rovers or UCD. So, you know, you just don't know how this is going to pan out, you know. I mean, the favourites, obviously, as you mentioned, will be Derry City, but, you know, they have a difficult away match to Cork, but you still expect them to get through. So Derry City could be the team to go on to win the FAI Cup. So time will tell.
Well, you've enjoyed many a happy moment with both Finn Harps and Sligo Rovers. And at the moment, Declan, these are good times for Sligo Rovers and all involved. Everton over for a pre-season friendly last week. And just looking there earlier on in the documentary that Everton TV produced about Seamus Coleman, it's online on YouTube, free to view. It had around 70,000 views when I looked at it a short while ago. Very interesting insight. And, of course, bringing into the whole story, his background and Gaelic football and Killybegs and a couple of familiar faces in the documentary. For Sligo, they had a little bit of a rocky patch earlier on in the season, but things going well. And you were at the pre-season game, 3-3 against Everton, and it was a very young Sligo side. They certainly acquitted themselves well.
They did, yeah. I mean, I suppose, It was an interesting game, in fairness. I mean, it was sold out, massive crowd at it, great atmosphere. I mean, the crowd, the stadium was full an hour before kickoff. You know, that just shows you the interest. A lot of Everton fans as well came over, and, you know, I know there was a big crowd from Killybegs was up as well. So, you know, and Shamey was obviously the star man. And you know, after the show was all over, it was really interesting because he stayed behind, you know, for about an hour and a half, signing autographs and taking photographs, and he just set a really good example. So what it's like to be a professional footballer, you know, but I mean, the occasion itself was very unique. It's a brilliant occasion for the club. You know, the first team players weren't involved because they were playing, obviously, in the cup against Wanderers. So Cove Wanderers on the Sunday, you know, so it was all barring three players, or they're suspended, and two lads that were just recently signed, they were on playing in the starting 11, but throughout the whole substitutions, it was mostly all, you know, 18, 19 year old lads playing, you know, so they acquitted themselves very well against a really experienced Everton team. You know, Shamey Coleman obviously played, Michael Keane, Dwight McNeil, you know, Cavalloon played, you know, Nasty Young, James Gardner, Mason Holgate, Jack Harris, Beto, you know, so they all played a really, really strong team out, you know, and the fact that we had to rely on Conor Walsh, who's moved back on loan, or he wasn't loan at Harps, moved back to Sligo Rovers. He was man of the match in goals, so he'd done his job as a goalkeeper, but we were under pressure, right? But what a result for the lads, and what an occasion for young lads, you know, to play in front of a big crowd and to play very well, you know, was excellent for the lads. But, you know, it was all about Shamey Coleman coming back home to Sligo Rovers, and, you know, he played in the first half of the match, but it's just the whole occasion was based around Shamey, and, you know, what a performance he put in, you know, both on the pitch and off it afterwards, you know.
Yeah, and not too sure how many Donegal people have scored against Everton, but the third goal, particularly sweet for one young Donegal man.
Absolutely. Kevin Muldoon, yeah. I mean, Kevin obviously we played with Derry last season, and we signed him this year, you know, for the new season, and he was a wee bit surprised maybe that they were all starting together, but he started and he obviously scored, so definitely a big occasion for him, you know, making his debut as well for the club, and then obviously scoring against Everton, so you couldn't ask for any better than that. But he's doing really well in the under-20s, and you know, we're delighted to have him on board.
Yeah, and worth pointing out, you mentioned obviously Killybegs, the Coleman link, but South Donegal, you know, there's quite a big affinity with Sligo Rovers, and that's gone right down through the years.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I was lucky enough to play there, and Shamey came through there, and we've Colin Mooney there now as well, you know, and there's been other players that were playing underage as well. Up Sligo Rovers that came through St. Catharines, and you know, so and Kevin Muldoon came from Donegal Town, so he's up there as well. So we have Shane Malone, a Glenys man, is up playing with us as well, and he also played in the match, you know. So there's a good nucleus of lads around the southwest Donegal area that go and play with Sligo Rovers, you know. So it was a brilliant opportunity for them, and they was really good about it. They turned up and played really well, you know, and that's important when you get chances in elite football and professional football. When you get your chance, you must take it. And they definitely did that last week.
Yeah, and finally, Declan, like Finn Harps, Sligo have had plans for quite a while about upgrading the stadium. And in fairness, there's been quite a lot of investment in the showgrounds in recent years. And the long-term aim is to have an all-seater stadium that'll be of a standard that would allow a certain level of international matches. And, you know, that's all progressing along as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're big plans, very ambitious plans in regards to, you know, they're looking to complete off behind one of the goals, and then they're developing a new stand on the right-hand side as well, which it's there in existence, but it probably needs just to be redone, you know, and that's what they're doing. And they're building in, like, a part of that, their social club into it, and they're building in units as well for business, you know. So they're looking at, you know, looking at it from the point of view of a business model and taking money in as well as anything else, you know. So it's, you know, it's a really good plan. I think they apply for 20 million through the large scale infrastructure funds. So that's a lot of money, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully they'll get support from the Sports Capital Department for that. But they have big plans, and, you know, they're a really community based club. And there's not too many of them left now, you know. Obviously, Harps are one, Sligo are one, Bowes as well, you know. So, and the Premier League, it's only Bowes and Sligo, you know. So there's very few community based clubs left. So it's a really important model to have, and they're well supported by the Sligo community, and they really back them and support the club at every opportunity. So it's a new development they've put in, and you know, obviously they need the funding to do that, but like all the teams, Harps the same, you know, we need new facilities, we need better facilities in the League of Ireland, you know. Finn Harps have been crying out for a new stadium for a long, long time, and it needs to be done. You know, it's so important, you know. But, I mean, you're looking at that, Sligo Rovers as well, but we need better facilities. We need better training facilities around the country if we want to develop better players. And, you know, for these players to go on, like Jamie Coleman, play in England and play professionally, and to captain your country and play for your international country, we want better facilities, and that's key, you know. So something's got to give on this one, you know. We need obviously the FAI don't have too much money, so I think the government need to come behind and support the clubs and give them the fund that they need and deserve.
That was former Harps player Declan Boyle speaking with Highland Radio's Chris Ashmore. Kickoff is at 7:45 p.m. tomorrow evening in Limerick, and we will have live updates here on Highland with Michael Cook. In other First Division games tomorrow night, as Chris and Declan touched on, there's a mid-table meeting of Bray Wanderers and Wexford. Cove Ramblers play second-placed Athlone Town. And league leaders, runaway league leaders, that is, Cork City, play a much-improved Kerry side. There's also one First Division fixture on Saturday evening as UCD, they travel to play bottom side Longford Town. That one is at 7:30. In the Premier Division, there are just two fixtures down for decision tomorrow night as there's a bit of a relegation six-pointer between Bohemians and Dundalk. That one is at Dalymount Park. And third-placed Waterford go to bottom side Drogheda. There's also one game in the Premier Division on Saturday. Sligo Rovers welcome Galway United to Markovic Park at 7:45. Shelburne are in Conference League qualifying action this evening as they've travelled to play FC Zurich in their first leg clash. That game is currently 3-0 to FC Zurich after about an hour, so not a good night for Shelburne, and they'll have an uphill struggle in the second leg by all things. Now, St Patrick's Athletic, they take on Liechtenstein Cup winners FC Vaduz at 7:45. That is also in Conference League qualifying. And just an interesting story in the soccer world that's popped up. Six-time French champions Bordeaux have folded. With losses of €40 million, they were relegated to the third tier of French football this week. All of their player contracts will be terminated and their training base closed. Liverpool's owners Fenway Sports Group had been in talks to purchase Bordeaux from current owner Gerard Lopez. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back after these to talk about the Olympic Games in Paris.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure, Letterkenny. From rebounders to goalposts, find everything you need to play your best at michaelmurphysports.ie.
Welcome back to The Score. Now we're going to turn our attention to the Olympic Games in Paris. Experienced Donegal athlete Mark English says he is in the form of his life as he prepares for another crack at the Olympics. The Finn Valley man has set numerous national records and personal best times in recent months in the lead up to the games in the French capital. Mark will take to the track in the Stade de France on Wednesday, the 7th of August, for the first round of the 800 metres. Paris will be a third Games for the Letterkenny native, who has taken a year out to focus as a full-time athlete.
Mark, how are you doing? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, doing very well, Ashley, and thanks for having me on.
Is it still as exciting now for you heading to what is your third Olympics as what it was for your first Games in Rio in 2016?
Yeah, it is still exciting. I'm in the form of my life at the minute. As you said there, my first Olympic Games was in Rio 2016. And then I went to Tokyo 2021. And now this is my third game. So it is exciting. And like, I'm going out there with a lot of personal expectations to do well. So really, really excited about that opportunity.
Yeah. You said you're in the form of your life. It's been a fantastic 2024 for you, Mark. And I suppose we'll go into that. There was the slight blip of the Europeans where it didn't go your way in Rome. But I was actually looking at times from this year and comparing them over the last couple of years. The longer your career's gone on and the more experience you've got, you've become an even better athlete. Is that fair to say, Mark?
Yeah, I have. Like, I've kind of refined some of my training techniques, my nutrition, my psychology, my different approaches to improving my 800 meter times, and I think that's kind of shown now in my racing times, which have got better over the last couple of years. Obviously the spike technology has helped there too, so there's a lot of things that are coming into play. But I think one thing is just the belief, and it's not just amongst myself, but it's amongst a lot of the 800 meter athletes at the minute, and even see it this year. There's guys that are just taking races on and running the first 400 meters in 48 seconds, 49 seconds, and then they're going through to 600, running 115 through 600 meters. So I think there's just a real want to grab the bull by the horns and just go for it, you know. And I think that's making a big difference to 800 meter running globally at the minute.
Yeah, and that seems to be sort of the general pattern right across athletics, and we can see it with Irish teams who are heading to big championships and preparing for championships, and you look at the likes of the relay team, and obviously the likes of Ciara McGeehan as well, who's running in various events, that there's the attitude and the mindset is very, very much more driven this time around, Mark. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, like we've got a great opportunity for lots of great performances across the Irish team. It's a really strong Irish team that's been selected. And like we've got some medal chances in there as well. So I think the overall attitude of the team is that like we're going there to really compete this time. And we're not just going there supposed to make up the numbers really. And that's a great place to be. It's a great environment to be a part of as well. And as I said, like it's a really exciting opportunity.
Yeah. And Rio, you ran two rounds. In Tokyo, you bowed out in the opening heat. What's the target in Paris then, Mark?
The target in Paris is to go out there and to represent the shape that I believe that I'm currently in. The thing about 800 metres is that you have a lot of kind of elements that are combining. I ran a 400 meters there last weekend, and you know it's kind of just an all-out sprint. You go as hard as you can. You're in your own lane. You don't have any of these tactical elements coming into play that you do in an 800 meters. So there's a lot of different scenarios that can work out depending on who's in your heat and how the race is run and how fast, how slow the race is. So like there's different scenarios that come into play. I suppose my overall aim is to just go out there and give the best representation of where I believe my ability is at the minute.
So what's your training like then, Mark, at the moment? Obviously, you don't actually start until Wednesday the 7th of August as the first rounds of the 800 at the Stade de France. So where's your training at the moment? Now, as we know, you ran that personal best and the 400 last week and with an excellent run. So now what's going to happen over this week and next week is as you lead in and you're tapering off towards the actual start of the games for you?
Yeah, so I suppose we're into that real tapering period at the minute, but I don't think that anything really changes in terms of the layout of the week. Like I'm still hitting all of the key training targets. It's just really about refining it, maybe reducing the volume a little bit, and just fine-tuning the different elements. Like my speed is going to need to be there coming into the championships. I said that after the national championships this year that I wanted to really try work on my speed. And that will be important come the Olympic Games on the 7th of August. So it's really just making sure that I suppose my strengths are really shining and coming to the fore, and that I'm ready for the 7th of August.
Yeah, I remember talking to Philip Dagenham, the Donegal cyclist who was part of the Sky team, and he won a stage in the Vuelta a España. And talking to him, he was giving us the picture that he was very much like a robot with his day to day routine. Is that the exact same for you guys as athletes, that everything is so strict and by time and routine?
Yeah, like I suppose over the last couple of months, I've just trying to be getting ready for the time that the race is going to be at. I think it's a morning time race, and I think the semi-final is the same. It's only the final that's on in the evening session, and that's a little bit different to previous championships where, you know, you had the semis in the evening time, and so you needed to be able to race in the morning and the evening. But I suppose I've just been getting up earlier in the morning. I've been training earlier in the morning, just getting the mindset change for that. And yeah, like every day you do have a job that you need to do. I suppose that's really the function of high performance, isn't it? Just doing something better each day, every day. And look, thankfully this year it's worked out so far. I've ran two national records, and you know I've been racing really well, so it's been working out so far.
Obviously, your downtime and your relaxation time can just be as important as the training time, Mark. What does Mark English do just to relax and chill out?
Well, I actually really enjoy a bit of fishing. Every time I get up to Donegal, I go out with my brother-in-law, and you know we can go out in the rocks or out in the boat. But it's really a relaxing way to enjoy yourself. I think that's probably the most enjoyable thing I do.
Listen, since the last Olympic Games, there obviously has been changes, and one of those has been on the management front, where you tied up with Ricky Simpson in 2000. I think it was the end of 2022. So, how has moving along with pace management benefited you, Mark?
Yeah, like it's been really good. Obviously, Ricky's a native of Donegal, and He's been a really good sounding board for some ideas to bounce off as well. And obviously with the roster that Pace Management Sports have, it's been helping me to get into certain races as well. So it's been really, really helpful. And really thankful for his support over the last number of years.
Yeah. As we said earlier, you're a more experienced athlete now, Mark, and I suppose with that as well, it helps you more, does it? It suits you better and build up to big competitions. You know a lot more how to handle them better than what you did probably previously.
Yeah, I suppose that just comes with time and experience. I suppose it's a skill, really, isn't it? Like, you know, the more exposure that you have to it. It's exciting every time I get out on the track, and I guess the day that I go out onto the track and I don't have those nerves or that kind of almost a small bit of anxiety going into a race, I'd be kind of worried. But I'm excited even to go out to Paris and put it into practice once more.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to most about these games? Because obviously it's the games that's closer to home. The first one that's closer to home for you because it was a quick trek to Rio and Tokyo in the previous ones. What are you looking forward to most now about the one in France?
Looking forward to the competition first and foremost. Like I've put a lot of work into this year. I've taken time out for my medical studies since January. I'm just looking forward to going out and really giving the best account of myself. And I feel like I'm in really good shape at the minute, and I am looking forward to racing everyone else out on that start line.
Okay, Mark, we look forward to seeing you on the start line as well. And all we can do here now in Highland is wish you the very best of luck in Paris next month.
Thanks, Oisin.
That was Mark English speaking with Highland's Oisin Kelly. Well, there's plenty of other local interest in this year's Olympic Games in Paris. Rachel Dara from Rafaux will be competing in the women's singles in the badminton. Kelly McGrory will be in the squad for Team Ireland's mixed and women's 4x400m relay teams. Ciara McGing, whose grandmother Pam Finney Nee Sheridan hails from Market Square in Rathmullen, she'll be representing Ireland on the 10m diving platform. And Tyrone's Jude Gallagher will step into the boxing ring to compete for Team Ireland in boxing. Certainly lots of local interest at this year's Olympics, so make sure to stay tuned to Highland in the next week or two for all the latest on how those athletes are getting on. And just finally on the Olympics, Ireland will play Tokyo gold medalist Fiji in tonight's quarterfinal of the men's rugby sevens. A 14-12 defeat to New Zealand this afternoon meant Ireland had to settle for runners-up spot in Group A and the tougher of the last eight opponents. New Zealand topped the group and they will play South Africa tonight. That Ireland-Fiji game is at 9. We'll be back after this short break and we'll be focusing on the big match in the world of Gaelic games this weekend, the All-Ireland football final.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Letterkenny. From rebounders to goalposts, find everything you need to play your best at michaelmurphysports.ie.
Welcome back to the score this evening. It's now time to look ahead to this weekend's All-Ireland football final clash between Galway and Armagh. The two sides will lock horns in Croke Park on Sunday afternoon at 3:30. With 10-time champions Galway bidding to win the Sam Maguire for the first time since 2001. And Armagh look to win their first since that solitary win in 2002. I caught up with Michael McMullen of the Gaelic Life to get his thoughts on the big game. Michael, thanks for joining us. I obviously want to get your thoughts on this weekend's All-Ireland final, but it's just been over 10 days since the semi-finals. Donegal ultimately came up short against Galway. The dust has settled, and even though it's clearly an incredible achievement for Jim McGuinness to take Donegal all the way to a semi-final, considering where we were this time last year, the general consensus seems to be that the game against Galway may be the one that got away. What did you make of it, Michael?
I think it definitely was one that got away. I fancied Donegal to beat Galway. I'm probably one of the people who doesn't buy into the fact that it's only year one of Jim. You know, you never know what happens next year with injuries or players moving away or whatever. So
perhaps a missed opportunity to seize the day.
Yeah, and it even comes down to so many fine things. Obviously, the missed chances that Jim spoke about, but it probably comes down to them having to chase Galway for much of the first half. Maybe they ran out of legs, and if anything, that first half was probably an unbelievable homework project for Armagh as to Galway's key threats, because it took Donegal a lot of energy to actually deal with them because of the sheer size and probably the variation of Conor Gleeson's kickouts. And you can talk about the missed chances that Donegal had. It even comes down to such a fine line, like the ball that Kieran Thompson touched in the ground. It was harsh, it was marginal, but it was the right call. 2 minutes later, that one put Galway one up. A few minutes later, Rob Finnerty slipped in front of Kieran Moore, but he got his arm onto the ball. And that wasn't touched on the ground. And that led to the insurance point that put Galway 2 up. So even those two moments themselves had a massive bearing on the game, because if Galway don't go one up, the game's completely different, because games are so finely balanced with a point. Sometimes a point can make all the difference in terms of how you're playing. But as you say, it probably is one that got away. I would say they'll be sore about it for a while.
Yeah, and you touched on a few of the incidents there, but the goal, obviously a huge score in the game, and a bit of a freak as well.
Your word's perfect, a freak. I did notice before that Matthew Tierney was lingering in front of the goals and Kieran Thompson was sort of tagging him, but it was nearly as if he made his run across. And like, if that ball had bounced anywhere else other than where it did, it might have bounced over the bar, or, you know, bounced and Sean would have been able to come out and get it. But it sort of bounced in such a way that Sean Patton, like, he's an excellent goalkeeper. There's not really much he could have done, because if he had to come out, you know, there was two bodies in front of him, the ball might have spilled. So it's probably cast a shadow on what was a brilliant season for him personally. But it was a big moment, and it wasn't the losing of the game, I didn't feel, but just chasing that goal and chasing, as I say, the way Galway went about their kickers just probably left them wee bit empty in the second half.
Yeah, and the day before, of course, Armagh causing a perceived upset against Kerry. Not a lot of people saw that coming, but in hindsight, perhaps it's not that much of a shock.
No, I don't feel it was a massive shock. I did fancy Armagh to win it. But, you know, I suppose probably the name and the traditional, I suppose, respect that Kerry would carry from their level of success since the GA began. But on the game itself, Armagh did look like there was a spell I felt in the middle of the first half where they were struggling. And even at one stage, you know, they sort of got to half-time and they gave them a chance to regroup. And even the goal chance that Tom O'Sullivan missed, Paddy Burns just did enough to put him under pressure to kick it, you know, wide instead of into the net. And again, we're back to the Kieran Thompson thing, where it's very, very small margins. That if Kerry goes 7 points up there, it might have a completely different game. As we'll probably touch on whenever you ask me about the final, Armagh's bench has just been phenomenal. It's even more than Stephen Campbell coming on at half-time in the last three games. It's even more than that. Like, Ross McQuillan, for example, has played 103 minutes of football this season. He's never started a game. He kicked a point. But the amount of runs he made at Kerry, it was enough to tip Kerry over the edge. They had no real response. And it was probably Armagh's bench that was the factor. And for a man like Kieran McGeaney to get so much criticism from even within his own county, I've said this so many times, I sound like a broken record, but all his players stuck by him. Nobody left the panel. Nobody threw the toys out of the pram.
Yeah.
They all stuck by him, so that the likes of Ross McCullen comes on and he has that influence. And that was the big of why Armagh have got, you know, a chance to put one hand on Sam Maguire this weekend.
Do you think it was the fact that Armagh went in against Kerry having had a really tough competitive season compared to Kerry's that might have made a slight difference when it came to that extra bit of grit and determination to get over the line?
I think there's no doubt in that. And as much as it is, it hasn't been a really tough season. Like, let's face it, we all talk about it up here in Ulster, like Kerry and Dublin. They sort of waltz into the latter stages without really being challenged. But if Armagh didn't have the bench that they had, like, I've used Derry as an example. Like, Derry don't have anywhere near the strength and depth that Armagh have. They wouldn't have been able to do that. So a combination of your point, which is very well made, that it is the tight nature of it, and then if you've got fresh legs that you can drop into the thing every 5 minutes, that helps it. But and Galway's probably the same, that they had a battle to get past Mayo, and you know they had their injury problems, and that has taken them all the way to the final Sunday of the year. So no, it's definitely a factor, and it might leave the likes of Kerry and Dublin starting to think differently about how they go about their campaigns from now on.
Yeah, sure will. Moving on to the game this weekend, it's a game that both sides will feel they have a real genuine chance of winning this, won't they?
Definitely. And even the four teams that were in the semi-finals would have been exactly the same, and Galway and Armagh will fully believe they can win the All-Ireland. And that's not just a manager standing at the front of a meeting saying that just to make his players believe. They will genuinely believe. Like Armagh beating Kerry, and the amount of times that Armagh haven't been able to win those tight games, that you know the Donegal listeners will be able to, you know, that Ulster final, they weren't able to see it out. They did see out Kerry, so there's the belief. Likewise, Galway, beat Dublin. I didn't see it coming. I'm not sure how many people themselves predicted it. Maybe if you dug deep into the Galway players' mindset, how much did they really believe it? So it has to multiply the other way now that they've got past that. And then obviously had a really, really tough game with Donegal, who, you know, were maybe my fancy team to win the All-Ireland out of the last four, to be honest, out of the four teams left. So the fact that Galway have beaten them, that's even more belief for them.
Yeah, and it's just fascinating that there won't be any doubts in either side's camp that they can lift Sam Maguire on Sunday. Surely sets us up for a big battle in Croke Park. Coming into the clash, even though it's a tough one to call, possibly the hardest All-Ireland football final to call in recent memory, actually, Galway are coming in as the slight favourites. Is that how you see it?
Probably our slight favourites, maybe just on the Dublin factor and maybe the experience that they have from being in that final a few years ago. I did a bet on the hurling final and the football final to finish level. I'm halfway there at 58-1, so a draw would be nice. A draw would be nice come Sunday. But and incidentally, in our Gaelic Life coverage this week, it's obviously wall-to-wall, Armagh, Galway, but Kieran Mina, who would have coached Derry against both Armagh and Galway, he made that point about being in the final. He actually flipped it the other way. He says Armagh may not have been in that final, but they've been in so many games that as long as they don't buy into the, you know, the hype of getting suits for the final and all that sort of baggage, he feels that Armagh's tight games is every bit as beneficial as Galway being in that final. And I never really looked at it like that before, but he's probably right in the fact that, you know, both teams are well tested going into Sunday, and they know that they both managers know that they've got four or five men behind them up in the stand in the subs area that can come in, and it's not a shot in the dark. They know that they've got men who will change the game, and I think that will even add to the game further, and I think it makes it very intriguing. I can't wait. Hopefully my press accreditation comes through and I'm up there watching it, but I can't wait, to be honest.
Yeah, so when the teams are named, Michael, who are the individuals that you would think are going to have a huge say on the destination of the All-Ireland this year? Who are you looking towards on both sides that'll take the bull by the horns and show the leadership needed to win? Shane Walsh, he kicked 9 points in 2022 against Kerry. Surely if he has another day like that, then there's only one place Sam's going.
Aye, that's very, very true. Like, he was brilliant that day, and maybe could have got man of the match even from the losing side. He's a huge player for them, and himself and Damien Comer and Sean Kelly have all had their own injury problems. But if Shane Walsh kicks into the gear, it'll be an interesting battle if Barry McCambridge goes up against him, having Mark David Clifford in the semi-final. But Shane Walsh, you know, and he's difficult to mark because of the positions he picks up. You've obviously got Damien Comer. I think the first time he scored this season was in the Connacht final. He doesn't score an awful lot, but he kickouts. And if you go back to the Connacht final, he was like a one-man forward line. Every ball went into him. Every attack went through him. And then obviously Sean Kelly. And I actually think that's a big decision. Do they start their captain? Because when you look around at the Galway team that finished against Kerry, there's nobody that you feel will be very easily dropped for the captain. It's a big call not having your captain in a final, but he hasn't played an awful lot of football. Maybe he's best served coming off the bench. I'm looking forward to see even that decision alone. But those three men are probably the key players that Galway will look to. And then obviously probably, as Donegal people are fully aware of now, it's that midfield area. Conroy, McDeed, Darcy, Maher, you know, sheer size, Matthew Tierney, and then Comer coming out to win the occasional kick-out. That area there is the area that Armagh need to focus on the most, and that's probably, as I said to you earlier in the conversation, the fact that the Armagh management were in Croke Park that day, knowing they were in the final, seeing that first half display and how they sort of made Donegal chase the game. It's maybe that lesson that Armagh need to take, and that's the Armagh side of, or sorry, the Galway side of things. For Armagh, you're obviously looking at Conor Turbitt, as you know, he's been the top scorer all through the season. It'll be an interesting battle with Johnny McGrath in there, and then you obviously have, you know, the likes of Rian O'Neill, Ben Creeley, Niall Grimley along the middle. If we're talking about Galway size, those are the players that need to step up for Armagh. Maybe with Andrew Murnan, who plays at number 14 but is very much a ball winner, he might do like Comer and drop out for kick. So they're the players that will maybe steer the way the game goes for Armagh, but probably, and it probably tells you a lot of the way the game is going now, probably one of Armagh's key players is Stephen Campbell, and the chances are you won't see him to half time.
Yeah.
But then again, that's the way it goes, where you need an ace somewhere, and Armagh will hope he's one of them. And then obviously, very quickly, neither team has conceded many goals this year. So it's the defensive structure and both goalkeepers, but I really can't wait for this one.
Yeah, I was just thinking there when you were talking, it'll be a tough ask to live up to that hurling final at the weekend, won't it? Surely the Galway and Armagh lads were watching that at the weekend thinking, how do we follow that?
Well, you can't. It's a different game, but in terms of an occasion that was immense, an absolute immense occasion, went the extra time, maybe Cork agreed they could have got an equaliser at the end with a wee tug on the jersey.
I would say
the neutrals are probably buying into that more, because Galway people and Armagh people and both sets of players, the only thing in their vocabulary is Sam.
That's very true.
You know, that's the only thing that matters. If somebody rewound the clock back and told Donegal they were going to beat Galway the first game of history, they wouldn't care right now.
I think
even with the whole FRC thing now, I think the football community a big final, and we could potentially get it.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for talking to us, Michael. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and hopefully we get a good match. Chat to you again soon.
Not a problem. Thanks very much.
Yeah, we definitely are looking forward to that clash between Galway and Armagh in the All-Ireland Football Final on Sunday. That was Michael McMullen, and he'll be providing live updates here on Highland from the 3:30 throw-in at Croke Park. There's also plenty happening here in Donegal this weekend on the Gaelic Games front. Tomorrow night there are two games down for decision in the Junior Hurling Championship as Letterkenny Gaels play Setanta and Burt host Four Masters. On Saturday, it's senior action in the hurling as old foes Setanta and Burt meet once again. And St Junans have little room for error as they play Sean McCool's at O'Donnell Park. On Sunday, the Intermediate Hurling Championship takes centre stage as Buncrana take on neighbours Carindonagh, while Erua Ballyshannon make the trip to take on Dunloe. All of those hurling fixtures this weekend throw in at 7:30 p.m. Well, it's LGFA League final day on Sunday, so all eyes will be on the three huge ladies fixtures that are taking place. To get the ball rolling on Sunday morning, there's an early throw-in time of 10:30 between Four Masters and Sean McCool's. That is in the Division 3 final at McCool Park. Then at 12 noon, it's the turn of Urris and St Noll's in the Division 2 final in Lifford. While at 12:30, it's Termon who are in yet another Division 1 final. The Burn Road ladies take on Erua Ballyshannon at McCool Park following the conclusion of the Division 3 final. Just turn our attention to cricket briefly, and there's a clash that begins tomorrow night. It's the Northwest Senior Cup final between Donnymanna and New Buildings. That one is at Beech Grove. Staying with cricket, Ireland have made an encouraging start to their test with Zimbabwe at Stormont. Having elected to put the tourists into bat first, Ireland bowled out Zimbabwe for 210. Andy McBrien took figures of 3 for 37. And rain in Belfast has delayed the start of Ireland's first innings until tomorrow morning. Moving on to golf, Padraig Harrington and Peter Lawrie are three off the pace as the opening day of the Senior Open draws to a close at Carnoustie. both opened with one under par rounds of 70. Canada's Stephen Ames is the clubhouse leader on four under par. And still out on course, Cameron Clark is two over par. Darren Clark is two over after a 74, while Paul McGinley shot an 8 over par round of 80. Seamus Power shot a 2 under round of 69 on day 1 of the 3M Open on the PGA Tour. Patrick Rogers is the course leader in Minnesota on 7 under par. And finally, in racing, owner JP McManus has described Istabrak as a special horse who left all his connections with special memories. With Charlie Swan as jockey, Istabrak won 14 Grade 1 races in a dazzling career. Among them were a trio of champion hurdles at Cheltenham. Well, that's it for tonight's episode of The Score. I have been your host, Mark Gallagher. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back with another episode next Thursday night at 7. Have a very good evening.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Letterkenny. From rebounders to goalposts, find everything you need to play your best at michaelmurphysports.ie.